Welcome to the Jazz Shapers podcast from Mishkon Dorea. What you're about to hear was originally broadcast on Jazz FM. However, the music has been cut due to rights issues.
This is Jazz Shapers with Elliot Moss on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishkon Dorea. It's business, but it's personal. Listening colour.
Good morning. Welcome to Jazz Shapers. It's where the shapers of business join the shapers of jazz, soul and blues. My guest today, I'm very pleased to say, is Daniel Taylor, founder of MDC Group, the award-winning office interior design company. Daniel's parents, part of the Windrush generation arriving in the UK in the 50s, wanted him to understand where they came from. So Daniel was sent to Jamaica for his early schooling. Thriving academically and earning his first graduate job as a designer, he was determined to excel. I always pushed myself further, he said. I never accepted my level. Daniel's focus on career development and his rise to the position of European Managing Director led him to promise to his wife that he'd slow down. But in 1998, and you can hear the laughs already, he founded boutique design and build company MDC Group, a family business challenging the preconceptions of the industry and embracing diversity and inclusion in the workplace. MDC has an all-women executive team and 75% of the workforce are BAME. Clients include the BBC, Boeing, the Conservative Party and Disney. I've been doing my homework, Daniel. It's really lovely to meet you. And I love all the stuff that you created, the things I've seen that you've created. Tell me, you look like a happy man to me.
Well,
And if that's true, why?
Well, I hate Mondays. You know, nobody talks to me on Mondays. Fridays, I'm a superb guy. Yeah, because I look forward to the weekend. I always look at life in a very positive way. You know, I'm thankful for some of the blessings I have and have achieved and where I'm going. A beautiful family helps that, knowing that they're doing well. When you have a great partner like what I have, she makes me happy.
And the business, I mean, you've been running your own business now for, sounds like over 22 years.
Yeah.
Is that, I mean, like, you know, I meet lots of people who run their own business, and my mum ran her own business, which means I was there with a front row seat of what it's like, the ups and downs. More ups than downs for you?
Do you know, when you run a business like ours, and you look at the most disappointing part of the year is when you start the new year, because you start with a clean balance sheet. And you've got to make it all back again. So you have to build the pipeline. The second bad part of the year is when you have to pay your taxes.
Apart from that, it's all good.
Oh, it's all good.
And tell me, when you decided to do your own thing, what was it that tipped you over? As we said in the introduction, you know, you promised to your wife that you were going to slow down. And then, I know what, darling, I'm going to set up my own business. What made you do that at that moment, if you can remember?
Well, I started my own business because I had gone through a really strong growth in my business life with doing a lot of traveling. I mean, I traveled to Czechoslovakia when it was Czechoslovakia, not Slovak and Czech Republic, Kuwait, Qatar, sorry, I should say, when I've been Kuwait as well, Qatar, when it was only one hotel. I think it was the Radisson or whatever it's called, and now it's dwarfed by buildings everywhere. Being in Russia, when in Moscow, when they would look at black people and touch your hair type of thing, because they only see people like me on National Geographics. And back home, I'm there fighting the corporate life by making the Friday phone calls to the US, the phone calls to the Far East on the Mondays and so forth. And my life was really heavily driven as a corporate animal. So I kind of missed the growing up of my two elder children. So we kind of two-steer family. So, you know, my eldest boy's turning 30, daughter's turning 29, and then the next tier is down is 21 and 18. And I said to the wife, right, I've got a couple of good clients. A lot of my clients become friends. That's how I like to work. If you look at all our big stuff we've done over the years, I become friends. I ingratiate myself into their lives and vice versa for me. And I said to my wife, I've got a couple of good clients who are good friends, and they said they will support me. And so happens that they're number one and number two in their industries, which I didn't quite pick that part up, you know, and how aggressive they were as competitors for the industries. So I was running up and down in my car. My other designer worked from his bedroom. And the first year we did something like 1.7 million, I think it was. Second year we did about just under 3 million. And my accountant said, you need to stop. You only have two clients. If one of them goes, you have no business. And that's when I made a decision about whether or not it's going to be a lifestyle business or a legacy business. That was a critical decision when I did that.
Before I talk about the difference between legacy and lifestyle, I just want to take you back one more time. So your confidence basically tipped you over to say, do you know what? Tell me if I'm putting words in your mouth, because you can say I'm wrong. The corporate life is fine, but if I'm slogging that hard, I may as well do it for myself.
Absolutely.
Was that the basic thing?
Absolutely.
And then the confidence because clients said they'll come with you?
Yes.
Okay. And when your accountant pointed out, excuse me, Daniel, it's going a bit fast and you're growing and all this, how did you then ensure that you could match the requirements that a legacy business necessitates versus a lifestyle business? Because lifestyle business, we all know people do that, and I have full respect for them. A couple of things, they stop, they start, but actually it just sort of fits in with a gentler way of living. You didn't choose that.
No, I decided to build assets, build structure and assets, proper structure and assets. So our first office was on the Woolworth Road in Southeast London, which when at the time Woolworth Road, McDonald's had a ban of people wearing crash helmets going inside of it, you know, and people were getting shot in front of Marks and Spencers and stuff of that on that road. And we converted a church hall for our office. I decided to buy the building, refurbish it, and then hire staff at different levels. I always felt myself, what if I ever get sick? So if I got sick, I've created an infrastructure which protects me and my family, you know, and not put it all on the line, going forward. And it was a critical decision. And when you look at Baim or Blacks in this country, that's where the difference becomes either a legacy or a lifestyle. People look at the short-termism by lifestyle. Wearing nice clothes, buying a fast car, you know, you might buy a house or, you know, but you don't think about next week. You don't really.
And why is that, Daniel? Why is it that you, A, you think that, and then B, you have chosen not to be like that?
I had a responsibility to my family and to my staff to ensure that I built up a legacy, a structure which protects the future of our business as best as I can.
But where did that responsibility come from? Where does that sense within you come from versus just going, Daniel Taylor, number one, thank you very much, because you're the opposite of that.
Yeah, I'm the opposite, but I'm a person who likes to win and also like to see my wins being something I've achieved. And that could be completing the first Facebook office, which we did, or it might be the first cashless estate agents, which we did with Daniel Ford, for instance, or the first cashless bank, which we've done with Jamaica National Bank, which is opening. I get off on that. And because of that leadership I show, I try some of the designers who have worked with me over the years have become rounded, creative, and informative people. More than will there ever be if they work with somebody else.
I've read somewhere, and you can tell me if this is correct or not, that you were sent, as I mentioned earlier, to your sent to Jamaica. I say sent.
Yeah.
It may have felt like you were sent to your grandparents' farm. You were up at 4:30 every morning, apparently, to feed the animals. Didn't see your family or London home for a few years. And I've got a quote here from the Sunday Times quite a few years ago. I heard from my mother only by letter, if I could turn the clock back, would I do it again? No. And yet here we are. Here we are, a guy in front of me, super successful, resilient, strong. I'm going to push back on that. Would you be this person if it hadn't have been super hard? Could you have become this person anyway without all the pain?
No. That was a critical decision. I owe who I am today by my parents making that critical decision. Yeah, in the 70s, that was a big decision to have made. I mean, they gave up a lot to send me there in the first place.
Were there peers of yours? Were your parents' friends doing the same thing?
No.
So this was unusual?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. It was unusual to send back. It's more like they send from there to here, but to send back. And my parents did it because they felt that with me, they felt if I didn't do something, I could end up going in the dark side, being criminal, or do something wondrous on the white side, you know, and using the colorisms as being negative and positive. I got sent over to Jamaica and stayed there for years. And, you know, you really appreciate the small things like electricity, water, running water, a toilet indoors. You know, our toilet in my grandparents' place is a 5-minute walk up a hill, you know. Or things like when we go to the supermarkets and we buy food and meat, for argument's sake, and imagine that I actually used to feed somebody, which I would end up being the food on our plate. You know, it makes you want to become a vegetarian. That's the reason why I would say no. I always threaten it to my two youngest boys, I'm going to ship them back.
I can hear you saying it, boys, if you don't behave,
yeah,
you know what's coming.
Yeah, I'm going to ship you back and you're going to learn the hard way.
Well, listen, I think the hard way seems to have worked for you. Stay with me for much more from my guest today. It's Daniel Taylor. He'll be back in a couple of minutes. Right now, though, we're going to hear a taster from the Michigan Academy Digital Sessions. They can be found on all the major podcast platforms. Michigan Dere's Victoria Pigott and Dr. Rebecca Newton, organizational psychologist and CEO of Coach Advisor, discuss the impact of women in positions of leadership and on boards.
The Michigan Academy Digital Sessions. Conversations on the legal topics affecting businesses and individuals today.
Do you think there's anything specific that we can do to prevent the impact that many women find maternity leave has on their career trajectory?
Yes, and I think some organisations do this very well. There's the question of, is this about having taken maternity leave, or is this a question of having X amount of time out of the business in terms of your momentum? I'd say the pre-work that you do before maternity leave, like planning how things will work when a woman wants to come back to work and how that will work, and to be strategic about as quickly as possible rebuilding that momentum is important. The other thing that which is important for women who are going on maternity leave, but it's also important for people around them to understand, is you don't actually know how you're going to feel about coming back to work until you're in that position and until you are deciding when to come back to work and after you've, you know, had the baby and started maternity leave. So I just encourage organizations to make sure that this isn't just box ticking of the kind of return to work plan and things, but having meaningful conversations with women as individuals, making sure that we are as flexible as possible, clear that we are as supportive as possible, that we're excited to have them back and want to do everything that we can in order to support them as they regain momentum with their work and their business. And the other reason this is important to do is that increasingly men are taking longer periods of paternity leave as well. So this isn't just a women's issue. This is something for all parents and for other people as well. I think there's things where people want to step out and take periods of time away from their work. And, you know, the more flexible we can be as leaders in an organization, you know, we're more likely to create environments where there is real mutual trust and respect. And you're likely to keep the best people or to have them come back, to have them be successful in the organization.
The Michigan Academy Digital Sessions. To access advice for businesses that is regularly updated, please visit michcon.com. Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Michigan Dorea. It's business, but it's personal.
You can enjoy all our former Jazz Shapers and hear this very program again with Daniel by popping Jazz Shapers into your podcast platform of choice. Or if you have a smart speaker, you can ask it to play Jazz Shapers and there you'll find many of the recent shows. But back to today, it's Daniel Taylor, founder of MDC Group, the office interior design company. So you are who you are because of where you've been, I guess.
Yes.
Literally, in your case, geographically, as well as everything else. Conscious decision to employ a very diverse group of people that work for you? And was it conscious because it's the right thing to do, or just as in a moral thing, or because from a business point of view it's just the right thing to do and it makes sense? And there is a distinction.
Yeah, there is. And with respect to the last 10 years where it's become that much of an issue. When I was starting out, it was an issue. I actually hired for attitude and trained them for skills. It so happened to be white, black. Yeah, if you were a black person in front of me or an Indian person, you were good at a job. I got a good vibe from you. You got the job. And my policy was to educate the staff, to push them more beyond and give them that element of common sense. It just so happens that I was one stage I had people from all over the world in our office. And I actually used to have client walk arounds and I could say, I can show you that I cover the planet on continents inside this office. And then I also make jokes. I won a job a few years back for the NHS, did a 999 call center too, which I won silver awards for and filmed by the BBC. And when I did the pre-qualification documents, it said, one of the questions was, what was your diversity policy? So I actually got everybody out front of the office and photographed it and put the photograph as the statement. And they came back and the guy said, that's an interesting way. I said, well, how do I write a policy about me, how I feel? You know, diversity should come as a natural thing where you should be doing the right thing. Color should, we all are equal, you know, and you should not judge people because of what their gender or their color. We're all equal. And for me, especially over the last 5-6 years, I've become more militant within my own business to drive it and then ask other businesses to follow it.
And to me, it's an obvious thing that you hire based on talent rather than color or gender and anything else. And we would agree on this, and it's any right-minded person will go, well, obviously.
Yeah.
The challenge has been finding the talent potentially, because people say, well, it's harder to find talent in the black community or whatever. Have you seen that, or is that a myth that needs busting?
It's a myth. You know, especially when you look at big businesses. Big businesses do recruitment in a very tunnel vision way sometimes, and they don't understand how to open up their horizons. I've met some amazing talents which come from socially deprived areas, which may never go to your typical Ivy League schools, but you need to go out there. So I used to only hire, for instance, from universities like Bournemouth, which have a very open and creative mind in training designers. But it seems to be also from social deprived backgrounds because of the cost and where it is. But I liked the way they were doing it. And I actually shone the Cambridge kind of elitist type chap, because I'm saying, you don't really need, you're going to come here and tell me this is how I've been trained. And I want to train this guy, mold him, help him, push him up, and then guide him. And that person will probably do more for the world than this guy over here who's from Cambridge. And if you look at over the years, I probably have hired, must be 300-400 people over the years. And I could tell you, I've never hired somebody who worked for one of my competitors to come and work for me because he's good. I think he comes with luggage. I prefer to build them up.
The last 6 months, forget COVID for a moment, which is here, it's also been an amazing time for this movement called Black Lives Matter.
Yeah.
Ever since I was a kid, and I'm hurtling towards 50, Daniel, I know I only look 30, thank you, before you even say, I can see it in your eyes, thank you. ever since I was a kid, and I'm a politics student, so obviously maybe I read a bit more about race and things, it's always been an issue, but I've never seen it pop in the way it has done in the last 6 months into the front pages and the middle page. It's always been a thing that people discuss in serious circles. Well, we've got a race issue here. It's pretty clear there's a major race issue. For you, has that affected anything that you've been doing in the world of practical business, part one? And part two, yes or no, I'm interested on that side, but emotionally, has it affected you?
Well, that's a very, very good question. On the business front, it's made bigger corporations relate to us better. It's been interesting discussions, which I've had with some big businesses. And sadly, with what's happened over the last 5 months, there will be some good out of it on the business front. Emotionally, it's been a roller coaster of a ride, because it highlights that in my years of being on this planet, things haven't moved a hell of a lot, you know, enough that it took a live feed to then let everybody focus that we have a problem. But that problem's always been there, isn't it? It's just the media shows it in different ways. But when you get on the internet, which wasn't around in my day, it focuses your mind. And it also makes us have a conversation with people who do not look like us to have a discussion which hopefully will change things for the future.
The politics around this, and generally you being a political animal, has your life connected to politics? And for those who don't know, Daniel is engaged in the world of politics in his own way, as many of us are, but to different levels and so on. Has the race issue been there for you, or has it been about a different kind of politics? As in, you know, you're generally, if you're a Labour Party supporter, then you believe in the welfare state, you believe in support, you believe in a safety net. If you're a Conservative politician, you believe in the free market and so on and so forth. Race in there is either part of that agenda or it's not. And you just said then, you know, it's the truth is in your lifetime, things haven't shifted very much. What's your relationship been like with race and politics?
Well, that's another interesting question. Funny enough, I tread the middle line with all of them. For instance, I'm working with Sean Bailey for London Mayoral, Sean being Conservative. And my attitude is that this is the first black person who's going to hopefully run the one of the largest cities on the planet. Now, whether or not your politics is, you know, Labour, Liberal or whatever, this is an opportunity for all of us to see a real change at a very senior level. So I'm supporting Sean. On the flip side, I also believe in the welfare system. So I'm very happy to sit with people on the Labour Party side, say, you know, we should be doing more. You know, you should be helping more, you know. And I have those direct, kind of clear questions, because I'm very comfortable with myself. And I don't believe, this is a statement you might have heard. I always look at people when, you know, you use the same bathroom as I do. So, you know. So why should I be scared of what, you know, the worst you can say is no. So I ask. So I'm fortunate that I can have the conversations where a lot of people do not have the confidence or comfortable to have those conversations. So when the pandemic happened, I picked up the phone, called up some of the contacts I have within the Conservatives. Are we going to go lockdown? And the word was, it's coming. So I had to then spread the word, we need to start getting the life rafts and start making moves. So, yeah, politics, from situations, what you described, it's a tough one for me. But I feel I've been able to navigate through the political side and the emotional of that, and the business side has become an easier discussion at a higher level.
Stay with me for my final chat with Daniel Taylor. Plus, we're playing a track from Monty Alexander. That's in just a moment. Please don't go anywhere.
Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishkondareya. It's business, but it's personal.
Daniel Taylor is my business shaper. He's the founder of the MDC Group. You're obviously a person with deep-seated values, yeah, which come from the lived experience you've had and just who you are anyway. I think even regardless of whether you'd gone back and toiled on the farm, you probably still would have been pretty much the same kind of person. I'm guessing. Your MBE that you received, which was for your work in the business community, fantastic. The other side of it, though, is that these values have translated into you doing a hell of a lot that's not in the business community directly. Tell me a little bit about the work that you do and why you do that.
Well, I supported a number of charities, but I was fortunate. I was one of the founding trustees of the Create Skills Council with Lord Hall, Tony Hall. And I also support organisations like the Black British Business Awards with individuals like Karen Blackett, who's one of the judges on that board. And I've been around, and my business has supported it ever since it founded 5-6 years ago. the Power List magazines. I've supported them for the last 10 years as an individual and as a business. And then recently, the Alito Foundation with Sir Kenneth Olise, who's our chairman, and there we focus on the future leaders, black leaders.
And you're also asked, I know, to go and talk to big businesses, medium-sized businesses, about being a senior black person in business. Do you get joy from all these things, or is it more just part of the wider responsibility that you've taken on yourself because you just think it's the right thing to do? I mean, how does it work for you? Why do you get so involved in all these other areas beyond your own business?
I'm a person who's fascinated with the 60s and the role models of the 60s, the Martin Luther Kings, the JFKs, you know, the Malcolm X's, and the list goes on. And I watch everything ever done or read anything which has happened through that era. And what's quite clear is that you always got to continue a message. You've got to get the message out. And I feel that I'm at a juncture of my life where I need to, whenever somebody asks me, do you mind? I normally say yes. It's very rare I say no. And I think that by just hearing me, I'm hoping that somebody can relate to it, because I'm not coming here saying, you know, I'm a Ivy League individual or, you know, a silver spoon. Or, you know, I did it from the hard way up to where I am now, and I'm where I think I'm going in the future, where I should be going in the future. So I'll talk to my BAME brothers, especially the our young people need to be influenced. They need to see direction, need to have faith and hope. And faith and hope should not be by people who rap or kick a football or whatever in sports. Hope can be the lawyer, the engineer, the doctor, the architect, the designer, the politician. We should be telling our young people those are great goals. Mm.
Just before I let you go, because those words are really important that you just said, you mix and you mention some names, important people, people of society. One last thing before I ask you your song choice. How have you, Daniel, to me, retained, because it seems to me that you are this person, how have you retained your humility? You come in here, we talk, it's as if you're just another guy. And yet actually under the bonnet of Daniel Taylor is immense talent, super values, unbelievable success, and yet we're just having a chat. So where does that come from, that groundedness?
Well, it's got to be my father. You know, my father was a motor mechanic. Well, when he came here, he trained to be a mechanic, worked for one of the oldest dealerships, Nail and Roots, Vauxhall dealer. And my father was one of those individuals who understood the system. So at the time, he would work privately for his bank manager, work privately for his lawyer. He worked privately for his insurance guy and built up his own network. And so he was quite a humane person. And he was the first person I ever knew who actually had a Barclay card. I knew nobody who had in those days, having a Barclay card was a massive deal, you know, and he had a Barclay card. He was a mechanic, you know, and he always would understand how to gravitate, how to talk to people, how to relate to people. And no matter where you sit in life, you should be able to do that. And I'm pretty good at that.
I would say you're pretty good at that. It's at least a 9.5 out of 10. It's been lovely talking to you, Daniel. Thank you so much for your time. Just before I let you go, what's your song choice and why have you chosen it?
Well, I'm an Incognito massive fan. And bearing in mind from the days of Light of the World and Brilliant and Bluey, who I adore as an individual, it's Above the Night.
Incognito with Above the Night, the song choice of my business shaper today, Daniel Taylor. What if I ever get sick, he said. This is a man who was focused on building a legacy business and putting in all the infrastructure that needs to go underneath that to make that happen. You need to go out there, he said, of finding the best talent, whatever colour or gender that may be. And finally, he's on a mission. He talked about getting the message out. And I thought that was really, really powerful stuff. That's it from me and Jazz Shapers. Have a lovely weekend.
Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM.
In partnership with Mishkondareya.
It's business, but it's personal.
We hope you enjoy that edition of Jazz Shapers. You'll find hundreds more guests available for you to listen to in our archive. To find out more, just search Jazz Shapers in iTunes or your favourite podcast platform, or head over to mishcon.com/Jazz Shapers.
The great thing about Atlas Butler is they do it all. Heating, cooling, plumbing. Look, I'm busy with work. I don't have time to wait around or deal with lots of people. One company, one call, and they do it all. Wonder if they'll clean out my inbox. Seriously, offer that service. Please.
Atlas Butler is at your service. Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listening, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.